You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
What's up, Fanther Trackers? You're listening to episode 60 of Making Tracks, brought to you by the fine folk over at fanthertracks.com. My name's Mark, I'm your co-host, and as always, I am joined today by a man who actually I haven't thought of an introduction for this time, but you know him by now. He's one of the writers on Star Wars Insider magazine, Starburst, and just about any kind of magazine that you can think of that covers Star Wars, Star Trek, or the genre in general. Mark Newbold.
I'm so glad you clarified Star Wars and Star Trek, because when you said any magazine, and just the first thing that popped into my head was, I've not written for Reader's Wives, and that would just be, that would have been an awful introduction. So thank you for that, Mark. Yes, hello, how are you?
I'm all right. You hear that?
Okay.
I've got a nice big tub of sweets, which I've kind of nicked off of a girlfriend. I'm guessing they were earmarked for trick-or-treaters this week, but I don't think we're going to get any. So their loss is my diabetic gain, I guess.
Very good. Very good. Well, if I find him in a coma next week, I'll know why.
Exactly. How are you? How's things with you? How's your Star Wars week been?
Star Wars week has been good. There's been lots of news, which we are going to dive into, obviously, in a minute. Yeah, it's been an interesting week. We've got an extra episode coming out on Monday that you and me have already recorded with Tom Spina.
We have.
Which was really interesting. Good fun, wasn't it? So that's all coming together. Yeah, lots going on. Mando Mondays are back soon. Busy, busy, busy.
Lots of things to talk about. So let's crack on.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
If she were here now, she'd probably be mooning me just off camera. She was outrageous and irreverent, and she could make me laugh. I could make her laugh. And she made everything more fun. I never stopped thinking about her, and I don't think of her in the past tense. I'm still thinking of her in the present tense, and I'll never stop missing her.
She had just this incredible mind. In every way that you've imagined she'd be because of that, that's how she was. There's nobody like her. I'm very sad to lose her so soon after having met her, but I'm very, very, very grateful I got to have her in my life, at least briefly.
We had great moments on set, and we spoke a lot about the film and about the process.
It's about family, and that's what's so powerful about it.
What an incredible human. You know, I think we all wish we could have spent more time with her, but so funny and smart and just out of this world amazing.
Instead of being upset, we have to remind ourselves to be grateful for what she gave us while she was here.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So this week, just gone, would have been, all things being equal, the 64th birthday of Carrie Fisher. Obviously, she's not with us anymore, but thankfully, StarWars.com and a number of other outlets decided to celebrate that birthday, as did we. And it just got me thinking, I thought, other than wanting to mention that it would have been her Beatles birthday, being 64, I just wonder, and I want your thoughts on this. I think the way the world has kind of changed, even in the last sort of 4 years since Carrie passed away, since 2016, that her honesty and her humour and her sort of acerbic view of life, if she was still with us, I wonder whether or not, and this is kind of off the back of the Four Chrissies thing that was on Twitter this week, where Twitter arbitrarily decided that Chris Pratt needs cancelling. I have an inkling that if Carrie was still with us, just saying what she said and doing what she did, that at some juncture she would have said something that would have got her cancelled. What do you think about that?
Ooh, see, that's a tough one, because I've got a number of very progressive and forward-thinking members in the Rebel Legion at the base, and they absolutely adore Carrie. One of them, Rebecca Fisher-Jackson, wrote the most beautiful tribute to Carrie, which is on our Facebook and Instagram feed for her birthday this year. And Billy Lord liked it and that. So she was really chuffed and it was really touching. I kind of think Carrie's acerbic wit carries her through. She's always been very good at observing. I don't think she would have said anything like the author from Harry Potter, whose name is
J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Yeah. Rowling, yeah. You know, she had quite a large like LGBTQ fan base following, and she was a champion for mental health. So I think she would be all right. But I tell you what, I think I have missed, because this year I've really followed the American election a lot more closely than I've followed any politics ever. She probably would have had some choice words to have said about both candidates, but obviously especially the president.
Because she was who she was and championed the causes that she did and had the following that she had and still has.
Yeah.
I just wonder, because she was and could be. I mean, obviously I follow Shatner as well, so her and Shatner used to ping absolute rockets at each other, and it was all in good fun. Yeah. Some people thought it was for real. It wasn't. It was all just jousting. And it was really this four Chris's thing that stuck it out to me. What the heck has poor old Chris Pratt ever done to deserve the battering that he got online? And I'm sure there'll be people listening to this will put me right if they think there's something he's done wrong, but I can't see it. And I just think, because she was so incisive and she would cut straight to the bone of an issue, it's not a commentary on her, it's more a commentary on just the way of the world now.
Yeah.
People are so quick to judge, you know, and if she was still here and able to stick up for herself, and she wouldn't have given a stuff about it if she'd have been inverted commas cancelled anyway. She'd have just popped a gif of her sticking a middle finger up. She wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, that's probably it.
I'm just curious to think, is that just me thinking that, or would other people think the same?
The problem is, we run the risk of, yes, it's great having these social media channels to voice our opinions and our dissent against societal injustices and corporate greed and everything else. But when you start attacking people, I think people forget the collateral damage. If there are people who are jumping to somebody's defence and they then get the heat and the flack on them, at the end of the day, you're a mate. So therefore, if I saw somebody flaming you on Twitter, I might step in if I felt they were incorrect and accept that I'm probably going to take the heat. But then it's like, you know, if we want to keep connecting with our celebrities and our film stars and have the kind of access we've had and we've so gotten used to with them because of social media, we've got to kind of also sometimes respect the right to have disagreements and to have different opinions.
It's a messy area, but I think with Carrie, I think she was big enough and strong enough and tough enough to stick up for herself. So I would never feel like I'd need to stick up for Carrie Fisher, because she could certainly stick up for herself. She was every bit the character that we saw in the film that looks out for herself and led from the front.
I'm Derek Arnold, and I get my news from FanfaTracks.
John Powell has announced the extended track listing for a November digital release of Solo: A Star Wars Story. I adore that soundtrack. I personally think it's the best soundtrack since Phantom Menace. I'm a huge fan. Mm. It bugs me, and it eternally will, that somebody didn't tick a box at wherever to nominate it for an Oscar, which I'm certain it would have won, because it won at the World Soundtrack Awards in 2018. So it won the big non-Oscar award, if you like, but didn't even get nominated, not because it wasn't worthy, because somebody didn't tick a box. What do you think? Are you looking forward to that?
I am. I'm looking forward to it for two reasons. One, because it is a good soundtrack, but two, because it's the first soundtrack I think we've had since Phantom Menace, which has been a deluxe version, which is very much the soundtrack that you hear. Like with the Phantom Menace one, if you mute the dialogue and sound effects and stuff like that, what you hear on the film is basically what you get in this disc. So you get these kind of weird moments where you get like a minute's worth of music, which is just like a rephrase of Anakin's theme or something like that. But it's really cool, because actually, you know, one of those things that we kind of forget is that they go and record these soundtracks, and they kind of record these suites and these concert suite versions of the soundtracks, but then sometimes it can get edited to like an inch of its life because pictures are still being edited, so they have to cut out a bar here or extend the music there or something to make some of the music fit. What we're going to get is hopefully a better representation of actually what we see or hear, I should say, in the film.
I'd be disappointed if at some point this didn't come out on vinyl or didn't come out on digital, on CD, you know, because there is a vinyl release of Rogue One, isn't there?
Exactly.
And certainly all the Skywalker Saga films. So it feels like it would be the only one that didn't get released on vinyl, which would be crazy.
It is crazy. I mean, to be honest, it is, for me, it's a toss-up between the Solo and the Michael Giacchino Rogue One soundtrack as to which one's stronger. But that's just personal preference.
Hi, this is Vanessa Marshall, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
Earlier this week, John Boyega sat down with Yahoo Movies and had a chat about a number of things. And one of the things that came up was the unused Colin Trevorrow's Episode 9 Duel of Fates concept artwork, where we see Finn front and centre leading the charge for the Resistance. John's been quite vocal about his role in the sequel trilogy, with some fans attacking him on Twitter and social media for being ungrateful for the opportunity he's had for playing Finn in the sequel trilogy. Generally speaking, though, Mark, what do you make of Colin's idea for Finn and also Finn's own story arc?
I get why Boyega would look at that slightly with envy, given what his character did in Rise of Skywalker. But I still think it's a little bit like Harrison Ford in the original trilogy, losing it a little bit because he didn't learn exactly what happened to Han Solo, and we never saw Han Solo blow up the Death Star. And as a character, I'm not talking about John as an actor, I'm talking about Finn as a character, was a supporting character. Supporting characters are there to lift the story of your lead characters. And in the sequel trilogy, your lead characters are Kylo and Rey. They're there to support the storyline that surrounds those leading characters. And in the original trilogy, Han Solo wasn't the lead character. Luke and Leia were the lead characters, or even you could argue Vader and Luke were the lead characters. And even the Emperor and Yoda, and these are supporting characters. Because it's Star Wars, we're so used to these supporting characters getting books and comics and animated shows and spin-offs, and they get filled out to such a degree they all feel like lead characters, but in that particular storyline they're not. And in this particular storyline of the sequel trilogy, Finn is a supporting character. So the fact that he didn't fulfill his destiny or any of that is kind of irrelevant, because it's not about Finn, it's about Rey and Kylo. That being said, all of his concerns as a, and we're stepping outside of the universe now, we're talking about real life now, him as a black actor in what film is more prominent than a Star Wars film, I understand his frustrations in that respect, mm-hmm. that, you know, he didn't get to see what happened next. And he's done a few interviews for Small Axe, Red, White and Blue, the episode that he's doing that's out in November.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's very proud of that, but he's talking about, you know, Star Wars in general and basically saying, yeah, I'd come back if the circumstances were right, if you know, if Oscar and Daisy were available, or I'd do an animated show, I can record it from home. You know, he's kind of loose and flippant about it in a good way, in a positive way.
It would be great to have a Finn animated series. I think he's definitely got the kind of, he's got the energy. So I think he would be able to do a really good animated version of Finn. And I think that would be a really fun kind of avenue to go down. If they wanted to expand the Star Wars universe after Rise of Skywalker, then having Finn and maybe Janna and Lando, for that matter, go off to liberate First Order troopers or what have you, or, you know, reunite them with their parents and stuff like that, as was kind of hinted, that would be a really great story that you could take anywhere and anywhere in the galaxy.
And also, you know, we've got Bad Batch coming, which is going to take us post Order 66, you know, the Dark Times and all that sort of stuff. And that's kind of getting forgotten about at the moment. Obviously, we've got other, Mando's coming and Kenobi and Cassie and all the other stuff that's coming. So it's understandable that it's not exactly at the front of our thoughts. But as a storytelling device, I think it could be really interesting, because outside of comics, we've not really gone into that area so soon after Sith.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fascinating. I think he probably just kind of said it off the cuff. Yeah, I'll do an animated show. I could record it at home. He's probably been speaking to Anthony Daniels, who's always recording stuff in his spare room, you know, because necessity dictates, doesn't
it? A lot of voice actors do. I mean, Brian Herron. I can remember when we spoke to him for Farthest From before that. So right out of about the beginning of lockdown, and he'd just put together his own kind of record studio so he could do voiceover from at home. It's something that's relatively easy. You literally just need a room and a little bit of acoustic padding. I mean, me and you kind of pull it off okay, you know, for the podcast, and we don't charge for it.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Good news arrived this week that Willow, after loads and loads of rumours over the past few years, is coming back as a Disney Plus TV series. Warwick Davis is leading the show once again as Willow. John Chu will be directing it, from Crazy Rich Asians, who'd been tweeting Star Wars related stuff, which we actually spoke about recently. Ron Howard's back as one of the producing team. It's a film that I watched back in the day and I've seen a couple of times since. I can't pretend to be any expert on it. It was more of a curio for me back in that sort of late 80s era with Lucasfilm making non-Star Wars stuff just before Last Crusade. I think it came out in 88, if I remember. What do you think? Are you looking forward to it? It should be fun to get a Lucasfilm produced Disney series that's not Star Wars, something a bit different.
Yes, absolutely. I can't say I'm a big fan of Willow, so to speak, but at the same time, because I'm a little bit younger, that was a little bit more in my social sphere. I definitely would have seen that a few times. I haven't seen it for a long time. It's good that they're not necessarily just focusing on Star Wars, and I think that's probably a wise decision, just to diversify a bit. They've got this Disney Plus streaming service, so I'm sure Disney are looking at Lucasfilm to say, what else can you do? Doing the further adventures of Willow, it makes sense. I'm assuming that Warwick's going to be playing an older Willow, so maybe it's a bit like the sequel trilogy. Maybe it's a passing of a torch to the next generation of Willow people.
It's made me want to go back and watch it again.
Yeah.
You know, so I definitely do want to sort of stick the... I have got on Blu-ray, so I do want to stick the Blu-ray on and watch it again just to refresh my memory, because I'm sure we'll be talking about it a lot more. Mm. But beyond just the fact that they're bringing Willow back, and you just mentioned young Indy, which was kind of my next question, it's not been resolved exactly who has complete ownership of Indiana Jones, because obviously it was a Paramount Pictures production. Lucasfilm produced it for Paramount, I understand, and Amblin are involved. I mean, it was a co-production
between
Lucasfilm and Amblin on Crystal Skull. And they're working on a fifth one with James Mangold directing, so that's still a couple of years out. But you've got to think, if they're prepared to do a Willow, which is kind of, it's not niche, it's a known property, but really, for modern moviegoers, Willow's not a film that will leap into their imagination. It's certainly part of that 80s group of movies, but you kind of think sort of 83, 84, 85, 86, Back to the Future, Gremlins, Ghostbusters, that sort
of Labyrinth, that
Willow
kind of
stuff. Willow kind of comes at the back end of that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I don't know how well it fared box office wise. I think it did okay. All I can remember is actually the effects, or at least there was that kind of that transformation scene that was kind of like groundbreaking for its time, which is very much ILM and Lucasfilm all over. The question is whether or not it's going to be a mini-series, or if it's going to be something a little bit longer. Who knows?
If Lucasfilm and Disney then can sort of get some resolution to the ownership of Indiana Jones, I'm sure it's all being sorted. And it might be sorted, given what you've just said, and it's a good point that Disney are going to want to get more content as much as they can, especially when we get past Corona and we all get producing TV shows again. Disney have said that their focus is Disney Plus rather than Disney movies at the moment. So a lot of energy and effort will go into the small screen streaming. Do you think that in the future then, along with other Star Wars shows which are clearly coming, do you think there's potential for an indie, not a young Indiana Jones style series that was almost like a history lesson, because they couldn't afford to do all the big stunts back then? Now they can show it, visualise it and do it as an action adventure series. Do you think that's a potential?
I think so. I wouldn't be surprised if that's not maybe where they go. I mean, I suppose it all depends upon what happens with Indy 5. It's been quite a kind of up and down pre-production period. We've had writers come in and out and change of directors and stuff. And maybe it is at that point where they just say, let's try something different. Let's try a Indiana Jones series. You're basically talking kind of like a World War II period piece. I think it's more fertile ground. But like you said, I mean, if there's rights and stuff like that involved.
Yeah, you're right. Is there room for a co-production? I don't know how it would work with Disney Plus. I don't really know the situation there, but you're right. I think you're right in plumbing for that sort of, because it's said in Crystal Skull, you know, when they arrest Indy at the beginning of the film and Jim Robinson from Neighbours walks in and says, do you know who this man is? Don't you know what he did for us in the war? They lay down this whole thing about these amazing things that Indy did during the war that you kind of think weren't necessarily all archaeology related. You know, he was a war hero as well, and it's a part of his life we don't really know much about. So I think, you know, if you get the right actor, late 30s, early 40s, sort of the age that Harrison was when he made the original films, a little bit older maybe, you can stretch it out another 5 or 6 years. You could tell a series in that era, or you could go the other way and just go younger. You could go back to the 20s when he's in his 20s, because Indy was born in 1899, so you could go back to that era, sort of young Indiana Jones era, and tell stories in and around there that are a bit more action orientated.
I wonder if actually there's less risk of reintroducing Indiana Jones with a new actor in the streaming service rather than as a cinematic release.
Harrison Ford will love him forever, but he's 80 fairly soon. So they were just on the cusp of believability in Crystal Skull, which was made 13 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, when he was still in his mid-60s. But Harrison being Harrison, he got away comfortably with that because he didn't look like he was in his mid-60s even then. You know, he could have knocked 10 years off him. And now with technology, you can make people look younger and such. But do you want Harrison Ford in a film and just do CGI to make him look younger? I don't know. So when you look back at the old Indiana Jones Chronicles and they add the older Indy stood on the steps of the town hall going, well, when I was a young whippersnapper in 1920 and I met Albert Einstein and all those sort of things. You think if they do a Disney Plus series now, there's part of me thinking, wouldn't it be cool if they had a younger actor in his 20s or whatever, or 30s playing indie, and then you bookend it like they did with the old ABC, which is Disney, of course, you know, the old show, the show that sort of sealed the relationship between Lucas and Bob Iger back in the day, and you've got Harrison bookending it. There's definitely some potential there if they want to do it. I'm sure Ford would do it.
It's a nice way of capping it off, really, isn't it? Now, interestingly, as an aside, just checking on Indiana Jones Wikipedia, it states that the Walt Disney Company has owned Indiana Jones intellectual property since its acquisition of Lucasfilm. Walt Disney Studios owns the distribution and marketing rights to future Indiana Jones films since 2013, with Paramount retaining the distribution rights to the first four films, receiving financial participation in any additional films.
So they could do it then without any comeback?
Potentially, yeah. It sounds like they would receive a percentage, but obviously, you know, legal jargon being legal jargon, it's a loophole. Disney wouldn't have to pay them a cent if it went on to Disney Plus. The distribution part of like any film thing is covering the actual costs of getting films into the cinemas and stuff like that. So therefore, if you're doing it streaming, then there's no kind of like heavy distribution fees involved.
Hey man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
Guess who's back? Back again. Obi's back. Tell a friend. That's right, Obi-Wan Kenobi is back. Well, I should say Ewan McGregor. He recently got the chance to try on his old Revenge of the Sith costume when he went to do some camera tests on the set of The Mandalorian, which everybody who's anybody has been jumping all over on Twitter and social media and has said it's a really great, cool thing. And Ewan goes on to kind of say how excited he was about it. He felt like it was a long time coming and generally just oozes excitement for this upcoming project.
Yeah, I think that's the coolest thing about the last sort of few weeks of him making oblique references to it on chat shows and different things.
Yeah.
Is his enthusiasm. He can no-sell something if he's not that into it. He's not the kind of guy to jump up and down and make out that he's excited about stuff that he isn't. So clearly he is up for this and got a bit reflective, I think. You know, it's almost like he's suddenly sat down and gone, well, you know, back in 97 I was 26 and now I'm 50 next year and my kids will get to see me do... It's a bit like Bill Goldberg coming back to WWE. It's like, my kids never saw me wrestle.
Yeah.
So I'm going to come back so my kids can see me wrestle. There's a sort of a vibe of that about it. And yeah, he does. He seems to be into it. He seems to really like the thought of working with Deborah Chow because obviously they did work on the movie, which never progressed, and then they've stepped back and now it's a TV series, which he seems really pleased about because it gives them more opportunity to dive into the character. So he seems to almost prefer that. That's the way it's coming across to me. It's like, oh yeah, we can really get into this. We can do a few episodes and really get into this. And like I say, clearly rates her, which is encouraging for all of us because, you know, we know what good work she did on Mando.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he did his costume tests on season one or season two, because some people online have said season one, but I mean, season two, they were filming that this time last year. So it could have been, easily could have been season two, but whichever one it is, he seems ready and raring to go.
He does. He seems really excited. And let's be honest, do you think that you would be able to fit into any clothes that you had from 2005 or 2003, something like that? Any clothes?
I take that quite personally, because you know damn well I can't. I can't fit into clothes I was wearing in 2015, let alone 2005.
Yeah, so...
I've got hats that I might be able to get on, but nothing more than
and
that.
And a stretch, yeah. Yeah, so... So, you know, fair play to him. Maybe he's kind of had to, he kind of lost a little bit of weight whilst he was doing all those long way up episodes and stuff on those bikes and what have you. He sounds really full of energy and it should just translate well to a really great performance on screen. Having actors engaged in the project from day one, and he kind of says that they've been discussing this for like 4 or 5 years. So this isn't something that they've just pulled out of their backsides in the last 6 months or so. Do we think that this was a literal camera test, as in like, let's put him in his robes just so we can see how it all kind of looks on, because they were filming on the Mandalorian set, there's going to be heavy use of the stagecraft. So let's see how that costume reads on camera in front of the stagecraft. Or do we actually think possibly this is an actual clue that he could be wearing his Revenge of the Sith costume at the start of a series? We know that by the time he gets to A New Hope, he is wearing a different costume. So it could just be something that actually happens fairly soonish after the events of Revenge of the Sith.
He's another one of those lucky buggers that's aged well. And they did sort of age him up for Revenge of the Sith, as they did for Attack of the Clones. He didn't look quite so much like Noel Edmonds in Revenge of the Sith as he did in Attack of the Clones. But you know, so I don't think he would look a million miles away from how he did then, which is encouraging, of course. So to get him in that outfit, I think that would be really interesting. I hope those pictures come out in time. I really do. be interesting to see. But yeah, I think you're right. I think our head tells us that it's going to be sort of midway between Sith and Hope. But we already hear rumours, and they're only rumours, but they're interesting rumours, that they are going to go back and do scenes within the Clone Wars or just after the Clone Wars. You know, so the storyline could be based 10 years after Revenge of the Sith, but we could very easily be skipping back in time to earlier adventures or earlier moments or flashback scenes, because that's part of the vocabulary of Star Wars now, flashback, the sequel trilogy gave us. So we could skip around, and he doesn't look that different, really. He really doesn't. And even if he did, I think ILM could easily nip and tuck digitally and make him look pretty much exactly as he did in Revenge of the Sith 17 years ago. I think it's very doable.
Yeah, maybe it's me being relaxed about it, but like I said, he does look good for his age. You wonder if actually they necessarily need to, but I suppose, you know, there will be people who will do side-by-side comparisons and everything. I think it's great news. I think it's really good news, and can't wait to see what happens.
The fact that he seems so interested and almost excited about stagecraft.
Yeah.
That he's, you know, you look at all those pictures of him on the set of the prequels, and it's green and blue. For the most part, he's standing in front of a sheet, and then you get to this, and he's in a wraparound LED screen that's, I'm on, you know, whatever episode of Mando they were filming, presumably. Or maybe, who knows? You know, you make a great point about the costume, but you can't tell me that they couldn't measure him up for an Obi-Wan costume and make a new one if they wanted to. And I'm sure...
Yeah, it could be. It depends on how...
Yeah, you know, it depends on how far forward the story goes. Or if they want to just kind of leave it at a point and go, hey, Ewan, we've had a great time. We hope you have too. Let's meet again in 5 years, because it'll be 5 years before A New Hope in 5 years' time. Let's do another series then. He might go, yeah, I'm up for that. But they might want to do what Sith kind of did. Sith very much visually sort of, here's the Tatooine sunset scene on Tatooine. Here's the Death Star being built. Here's Vader standing next to the Emperor. And they very much seed the link between Sith and A New Hope. And of course, we've had plenty of stuff fill in the gap now. So in retrospect, they didn't need to do that. But it's good that they did, because that was the end of the 6-film saga at the time. So fair go. But with this one, you know, part of you thinks, is he going to be in the old Alec Guinness robes from A New Hope at the end of this Obi-Wan series? Or will he still be kind of wearing half of... Because, you know, like Yoda lost his Jedi robe at the end of Sith, didn't he? Gets caught up on that pole. And so in Empire, he's wearing something kind of different. He's not wearing the same clothes. I think you're right. I think him wearing that Sith outfit is probably more significant than just him saying, I tried on my old costume.
I suppose it all depends, doesn't it? I mean, if they're not starting production until March, they could totally make a new costume. I mean, Jedi robes don't take that amount of time or effort to actually make. Now, if they wanted to be really literal about it, tracking down that the same fabric is going to be pretty hard, because the problem is with fabric is that sometimes associated with fashions, and obviously fashions come and go, so you can't necessarily always get the same fabric. I can remember I went for about 2 years trying to find a really accurate match to the episode one Obi-Wan fabric, and we couldn't find it. Who knows? It could, like I said, it could just be, let's get Ewan in for a camera test, and oh, let's give him the robes that he wore in Revenge of Sith. Are you still fitting them, Ewan? Yeah? Great, perfect. We got them in the archive, so we'll just give them dry clean or something like that and stick them on and wander around the desert. I think maybe one thing that actually is quite appealing to him doing the series, especially with the stagecraft stuff, is that you don't need to go to a desert. You know, you don't need to go and spend like weeks and weeks out in Death Valley or even Jordan or somewhere like that. You can all do it in the relative comfort of a studio and not have to get sand literally everywhere, because we know what sand's like.
There may be a quote or two about that in the films.
Indeed. All that talk of sand has made me slightly itchy, so I'm going for a shower. Let's wrap up this episode. And if you want to get in touch, and if you would like to weigh in on any of the topics that we've spoken about today or in any of the previous episodes, Mark's going to tell you how.
Well, if you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, you should visit fanthatracks.com or check out the Fanthatracks app through the App Store and follow us on your mobile device if you've got one. You should reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. Still need listeners' questions. We're ready to answer anything you've got to ask, pretty much anything. We don't give out medical advice. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at Fanthatracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, please leave a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the Fanthatracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Episode 60 is in the can, and I couldn't be happier.
Excellent. Right, well, in that case, mate, you take care. I will speak to you at some point next week, and everybody else, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fanthatracks Radio, it's Desert Planet Discs.
You're listening to Fanthatracks.